Welcome to the second Molston Coors Growers Group podcast. My name is Duncan Rawson and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. I guess the one thing that we can say is that life is never dull. From issues around fertiliser prices, shortage of labour, shortage of lorry drivers, challenging harvests, empty supermarket shelves, environmental pressures, and of course Captain Kirk finally being able to boldly go where no enterprise captain has gone before. There is a lot for us to get our heads around at the moment. I'm delighted to welcome to this podcast Jerry Dyson from Molson Coors, Richard Pratt from Frontier, Carl Stokes from Soufflé, and Jake Freestone, our very own award-winning member of the Molson Coors Steering Group, who between them will try and sort out the barley from the chaff and help navigate us through some of the issues facing us. So sit back, make a cup of tea, and I hope you enjoy the podcast. To kick us off, I am joined by Richard Pratt from Frontier and Carl Stokes from Soufflé to talk about the recent harvest. A harvest somebody recently described to me as being the wettest dry harvest on record. So I'm going to turn to Richard first. And Richard, how's the harvest been in terms of yields and quality?
Relatively average, you would say, both over the winter malting and the spring malting barley. Average in terms of yield. So there was no real surprise in any way on those. Mm-hmm. I think it is the quality really that's given us some challenges this year in some ways, but also on the winters you would say the quality was low nitrogen, excellent. We had some screenings problems, bit of low retained winter barley. I think the admix caused us a bit of problem on some of the winter barley. Particularly wheat admix. I think that was all going back to the autumn before when it was drilled. We've got quite a lot of volunteers coming through and pushing a bit of a wheat admix. Yeah. So that's the winters, but generally they were all sort of fairly usable, especially as at Burton we dropped the retention spec and captured some of that lower nitrogen. Mm-hmm. On the spring barley, I think the spring barley's been excellent quality. We've seen relatively low nitrogens, low screenings, high retention. I suppose the one little problem we've had recently is a bit more ergot than we would like to see, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's probably just down to the season.
Yeah. And Carl, from a malting's point of view, how's it been for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo most of Richard's points. You know, probably we would describe it quality so far. I'd probably describe it better than what Richard was saying in terms of average. Of course, that's comparing it to perhaps some very recent previous crop years with high nitrogens. So in this sense, we're certainly in a better place. You know, yes, winter barley for sure. Bit of a retained problem, an issue there, and we're somewhat lower than we've seen in previous years, averaging 1.58 nitrogen. So you know, we're at the right sort of level there.
Yeah.
Moistures were a bit lower, obviously with the first part of the harvest sort of less impacted with the rain. Planet we're averaging 1.58, lorry at 1.59. So the spring barley is definitely as well are sitting on the lower end of nitrogen. And the retained value is very good. So, yeah, in that sense, things are looking good. Rejection rate, I'd say, overall, since the beginning of the campaign, we're sort of trending about 4%. So not too bad.
Yeah.
Like what Richard just said, the last 2 weeks, you know, would be the more problematic weeks with ergot rejections. And that's certainly something that's coming to sort of forefront, really.
Yeah. And have you seen any differences in terms of how the different varieties are performing?
Yes, in terms from a malting point of view and how things are looking, we've malted both Craft and Planet so far. This is a lot earlier than in previous years, you know, with the tight, let's say, old crop stock I think the whole market came in with into this campaign, it has pushed us to needing to malt new crop a lot sooner. So yeah, so far everything has looked good malting quality wise, and this has clearly been helped with the low nitrogens, and it's had a positive impact on extract, lower colors, Probably, yeah, lower soluble nitrogen, improved beta glucans, which is exactly what Jerry and the brewers will be looking for.
Yeah.
I would say at the moment, just on the winter barley, with that sort of lower, the average retained is somewhat lower, we would be somewhat cautious about blending two-row spring and two-row winter malt together. That's something that's usually done. Mm-hmm. We'd probably be a little bit cautious just at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And Richard, the sort of the million-dollar question really for you is what's the malting barley looking like, market looking like over the next few months in terms of pricing?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, unfortunately, but we've seen quite a dramatic malting barley market prices. Even though we have a surplus of malting barley in the UK, we have seen prices continually going up week after week. Up to the last couple of weeks. They will have to come to an end at some stage, but it's at what point they do. But that's, as I said, the yield and the quality on the spring barley is excellent, and we have a surplus of spring barley in the country.
Yeah.
The whole malting market has been driven by export demand, basically. And it all comes down to the poor weather we saw in North America, in America, and in the USA and in Canada, has left them with a shorter malting barley. Mm-hmm. And in very basic terms, basically, the North American market is looking for supplies from Europe. Those supplies probably won't come from the UK. Although we have had inquiries into the UK, but you're looking at bigger vessels loading from mainland Europe, probably,
yeah.
And going across to Canada and the USA. But in itself, that leaves, if we're exporting out of mainland Europe, out of Denmark or France, it does leave holes into mainland Europe, and that's what the UK surplus, where the UK surplus will go into mainland Europe, basically, on smaller vessels. So you're looking at 3,000-4,000 tonners to go to mainland Europe, and then the bigger vessels will go from say Denmark across to Canada and North America.
Yeah. And again, it's probably a difficult question to answer at the moment, but do we have any sort of early indications of variety choices and plantings for next year?
Well, I think it's more of the same, really. I don't think there's any real, as a group, Jerry decided to stick with, we've got crafting as the main winter. We've got Electrum going in the ground, some Electrum, but that'll be a smaller amount, just enough to fill one of the bins at Burton.
Yeah.
So they're the winters. And on the springs, I think the quality of Planet and Laureate, you know, they're the two varieties that are doing the job at the minute. And I don't think there's anything close enough really to push those out. It's all about a matter of volume for Carl at the Maltins. He wants to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. I think the only spring barley that we're really looking at just at the minute, I suppose down the line, is Skyway, but that's probably another year off. It's a very high yielding. It's probably got 3 or 4% on all the other spring barley, so that's a variety that might come in the end, but certainly not for next year. So at the minute, it's still, we stick with Planet and we stick with Laureate.
Yeah. And do you have anything to add to that, Carl?
I would say absolutely. You know, it's respecting that the evolution, things move on with varieties. In the last sort of 18 months, 20 to 24 months, you know, brewers and maltsters have probably somewhat taken a backseat on trialing new varieties. Some of that's down to the poor crop year we had last crop year. And equally also looking to think, streamlining things and keeping things simple as we can. So I think, yeah, Planet and Laureate and Craft seem to be somewhat still the way to go. Yeah, clearly there's some Electrum going forward, but outside of that, not too much more to add at this stage.
Okay, that's great. Thank you both. In this next segment of the podcast, we're picking up on an issue that's been causing the industry problems for some time, but more recently has really hit the headlines with fuel shortages and empty shells. And that is, of course, the haulage crisis. I'm joined by Jerry Dyson from Molson Coors and Jonathan Hoyland at Frontier to discuss this subject. And I'll start with you, Jonathan, if I may. And could you just explain what impact the haulage crisis is having across the industry, and more particularly for the Molson Coors farmers?
The haulage market is segmented between sort of bulk tipper work, which is the lorries that come to farms to collect grains, curtain side work, refrigerated work, which tends to go from factory to distribution. And the fact is the bulk tipping work, and particularly the agricultural section of the bulk tipping work, is not so attractive compared with those other sectors. And so when you have a shortage of drivers and wages go up, they can drift off into other sectors, reducing the amount of lorries in the bulk tipping work.
Yeah. And for Molson Coors, Jerry, what impact is it having for you? I suppose you're having to deal with both inbound and outbound.
Yeah, we've experienced difficulties from both ends, really, in relation to the inbound, all the materials that we use at our breweries. We can accommodate sort of delays probably upstream of the packaging lines in the brewery by carrying appropriate stock. So short-term delays on raw materials at that end of the process can be accommodated by carrying the stocks that we do. Where we do see an impact is when it involves delays in delivering packaging materials to our high-speed bottling and canning lines. Mm-hmm. And yes, we have had several instances where key raw materials have not arrived in time. We're less able to carry stock at that end. We operate much more sort of on a just-in-time basis.
Yeah.
Albeit we do carry some stock in advance, but yeah. On our packaging lines, we have had several instances where materials haven't arrived on time. We've had to either delay the lines or change over to other SKUs, other stock keeping units, other qualities of beers that we can run and do have the materials for. And replanning lines on that basis can cause significant disruption.
Yeah.
Right down the supply chain, to be honest. Fortunately, we haven't seen that many of those, but they certainly cause big problems when they arise. In relation to the downstream work from the brewery, i.e. delivery of the finished goods to the outlets, we have a contract with a supplier, and so we have a long-term arrangement with them, and so we have a degree of protection on that side, albeit they are suffering in the same way as everybody else from driver shortages, so we are experiencing some issues there. So whilst our service levels are above 90%, we would expect them to be closer to 100%. Mm-hmm. And then we're not quite there yet, and one of the major reasons for that is deliveries. Probably the most acute area that we experience is actually the return of empty containers from the on-trade, and getting kegs back from the pubs back to the up the return supply chain is key, and that's where we're experiencing significant difficulties at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I think one of the key questions is how are we going to sort this issue out? And this is obviously a national issue that just is not just affecting you guys. But Jonathan, perhaps if I come back to you, what do you believe the answers are in terms of sorting this?
Well, we've got some short-term things we can do. And then we've got some much more long-term ones, I'm afraid. In the short term, we've asked all our destinations, whether that's feed mills, flour mills, maltings, ports, or all to try and increase their working day and stay open longer. You know, believe it or not, there are still places that shut at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we're asking those sites particularly and others to stay open and make the day longer.
Yeah.
So we can get more throughput through the day. We're also trying to have contingency plans to deal with rejections, particularly at the quality sites. Hauliers sometimes can be dragged right out of the area if they have to be downgraded to feed and there's no feed home on site. Mm-hmm. And in the longer term, you know, we're going to have to make bulk tipping work more attractive. You know, some of these drivers are out four nights out of seven, parking in poor places. And in the long run, if we're going to attract people into the industry who are perhaps more locally based, i.e. not from, you know, the far side of Europe or even further afield, the terms and conditions are going to have to be more attractive in the long run.
Yeah. And Jerry, do you have anything to sort of add to that?
No, not really. I think there is a short term fix, if you like, and we are working with our logistics supplier, whose trade team, to get over those short term issues. But I agree with Jonathan. Yeah, there's a long term issue that's going to take some, obviously, going to take some time to sort out. It's not. This is not a. Thing that's going to go away overnight, that's for sure. And I think you feel that in the lead up to Christmas it's potentially going to get worse, there is a concern there, so
yeah.
No, I think there's some long term issues to sort out in this industry, and and we'll be working with our haulage supplier to ensure that they put into place what's required to ensure that we can meet our customers' demands, and that's but it's not a quick fix, that is for sure.
And to ask you both an impossible question, I appreciate, but yeah, how long do you think we're going to be having to deal with this for? Is this, are we talking months or are we talking years before this issue is resolved? Jonathan, do you want to have a go first?
Yeah. I mean, even before this current crisis, we had peaks and troughs and stresses in haulage, you know, around harvest, around Christmas, around Easter even. And so the current crisis will probably abate after Christmas, but it's not going to change the long-term situation. Unless we attract more people into the industry, and maybe we move away from quite so much just in time to something with a little bit more stock, and some of the haulage fleets actually do turn a profit.
Yeah. And Jerry, do you have a view? I guess it's probably similar than him.
Yeah, not much to add, to be honest. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be sorted out particularly quickly. Absolutely, it seems that attracting the right people into the job, making the, as Jonathan says, making it a more attractive job in any number of ways, is the way of ensuring that we've got the drivers to meet the demand.
Yeah,
and that's going to take some time, I think.
Yeah. Okay, that was very helpful. So, albeit frustrating that there's no quick wins here, but we knew that. So thank you both very much. Okay, I'll Next session is an update from Molson Coors, where I've got Jerry Dyson on the podcast. It strikes me that we still live in an uncertain world, Jerry, but one that perhaps is returning to some kind of normality in the UK anyway, as we adjust from the COVID restrictions that we've all been living under for the last 18 months, almost heading towards 2 years. I guess the question is, what's been happening in the beer market since we last spoke? You know, how's the summer been and how are the winter months shaping up?
I think generally things are shaping up reasonably well. I think on the last time we had a chat on the podcast is that we talked about how things were on the on-trade and the off-trade. We're still pretty encouraged by what's going on in the on-trade, to be honest. We're up to 90% of 2019 volumes in the on-trade. Okay. So, and we see this building. It's been steadily building across the summer. So I think we're pretty encouraged by that, and certainly. I think probably if we'd been offered that at the start of the year, as the on-trade director said, we probably would have bitten your hand off. Mm-hmm. So I think overall, we think that we're in pretty good shape, actually, in terms of the on-trade, and we can see sort of that strength building on as we lead up to the Christmas period. The off-trade is still strong. There is this view that some people have changed their drinking habits to a certain extent, and certainly we're seeing that if we're not up 100% of 2019 volumes on the on-trade, some of that has been picked up by increased volumes in the off-trade. So overall, in terms of the volume side of things, I think we're pretty pleased with what's going on at the moment. It's in terms of what we've been through over the last sort of this year and the previous year. I think probably we're pretty pleased with the way things are going.
I think we touched on the off trade in the last podcast, and you were saying then how it's remained quite buoyant. Do you think that will be the case going forward as well, or do you think as things do settle, we'll see the on-trade sort of taking away from the off-trade?
I don't know. I don't think anyone's sort of particularly sort of sure as to how that's going to shape up. So I wouldn't like to say really. I mean, we can really only go on what we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah.
And of course, there are some major events coming up in 2022, and there's the Christmas period before then, I think the feeling is that there's still more to go in the on-trade, so we're pretty encouraged with the signs that we've seen so far. How much has been lost to the off-trade, I don't know. I don't think anyone's in a particularly good position at this moment to say long-term how that will be.
Yeah. I think we're all looking forward to next year. From Molson Coors' point of view, what are your key areas of focus for the next 12 months?
Well, I think sort of touching wood that we can have an interrupted trade situation going forward, I think it must be a good target, and there's obviously good signs in the UK that will be the case. I think we would like to see continued support for the on-trade from the government. The other focus for us is just our investment in our brands next year. I think probably the standout for Molson Coors is that we're putting record investment behind our brands to energise them and to premiumise our portfolio. So look forward to advertising and activity both for the on-trade and the off-trade for all our major brands. So there's a big campaign for Coors and of course for Carling, new packaging for both those brands. There's further support for Doombar. There's a very iconic glassware coming out for Doombar, I think, so that's worth looking out for.
Right.
And certainly some of their brands, Atlantic and Offshore, are also receiving support. I think our big, the most exciting thing we're looking forward to in terms of brands is the off-trade launch for Madrí Excepcional, which is going to be in the first, I think it's in March of next year. So it's been enormous. Madrí has been enormously successful on the on-trade, and we've got, you know, massive hopes for how good it's going to be in the off-trade as well. So, so look out for that. And if you haven't tried Madrí in the on-trade, just you know, in the pubs, do have a try. It's been very, very well received in all outlets, and it's doing exceptionally well. So it's getting that into the off trade is a big exciting area for us. I think probably the sort of looking forward and being optimistic, I think probably the excitement around our brands right across the piece, and I could go on about cider as well. The excitement about the brands that we've got out there and the investment we're putting behind them, I think that's probably the key area of focus and where everybody is where everyone's getting very excited about that.
Yeah. I guess from our growers' point of view, I guess the thing I'm looking forward to most actually is as we go into 2022 is actually meeting them face to face and actually being able to do things which aren't over video links, etc. What are you looking forward to most in terms of our relationship with the growers
I totally agree with you. I mean, we had a meeting at Andy's farm that I was able to attend in July, and it was great to get out there. And certainly, first thing is to have the AGM in February, and getting as many people there as possible. It would be great. It'd be great to have that back on the calendar as a live event, and as you say, more face to face contact throughout the year is important. Particularly, I'd like to see, we're working hard on getting as many people involved in the group as possible. So, and I would particularly encourage people to engage in some of the communication that's out that we send out there. And the intention is to do another sustainability survey to continue to track our sustainability performance. And I'd really look forward to having a big response rate from on that survey. So building on what we did in this year, and just getting a great response rate on that sustainability questionnaire that we did, and sort of just moving our sustainability agenda forward as we should be doing on a year by year basis. I think that's probably what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah. I think that's, 2022. I think most of us are looking forward to it. You know, hopefully we're moving into more positive times with more opportunities, etc. within them. So thank you very much, Jerry. And we'll speak again soon.
All right, no problem. Bye then.
This next segment is A View from the Farm, and I'm delighted to welcome Jake Freestone, who's a member of the Molson Coors Growers Group Steering Group, and more recently a winner of the Farmers Weekly Environmental Champion Award. So welcome, Jake. And I was going to kick off by just asking you how harvest has been this year.
Duncan, thank you very much. Great to speak to you and everybody else. How has harvest been? Overall, it's been a slightly above average harvest for us, which in a way I'm really quite pleased about, considering if we cast our minds back to the sort of growing season that the 2021 harvest had to put up with. We had floods here in the first week of October, and then we had a pretty wet winter, and then a really dry and cold April. I think in April we had about 25 frosts over that month. And then we sort of went into a very wet and dull May. And really, I wasn't dreading harvest because the crop was all there, but had visions of sort of 2012 when we were very wet, very dull, and it sort of really disappointed. So as things stand, I'm pretty relieved and very thankful.
Yeah. Well, that's positive, because I think it has been a challenging harvest for many, particularly in terms of quality. A lot of us know quite a lot about what you're up to on the farm. You're sort of out on social media quite a lot. But what I'm really sort of interested in now is the next 5 years. And what do the next 5 years look like for you? What are your sort of going to be key areas of priority and focus?
Well, we certainly have some huge challenges ahead of us, don't we? And those challenges seem to be shifting at a very rapid pace. And I think that is what we have to get to grips with. Just looking at fertiliser markets over the last month, 2 months, virtually doubled for nitrogen. You look at sort of spiralling input costs if you can get hold of product at the moment, glyphosate being one of the major ones, which the distribution network is struggling to be able to deliver.
Yeah.
And then you put into that the reduction in basic payment scheme payments over the next 5 years, real uncertainty about ELMS, environmental land management, and sustainable farming incentives. Then you also chuck into that the farming rules for water, and how on one hand we're being asked to improve soils, and on the other hand we are being restricted about when we can apply manures to those fields. So it's we have a lot of head scratching to do as an industry as to where we go with food production and environmental improvements. So but where do we go? I suppose we're very committed to the path that we are on at the moment, and see absolutely no reason to deviate from that at all in terms of our regenerative system. It's starting to really deliver environmental and financial benefits to the farm business. And I think those benefits are going to sort of multiply up as input costs are increasing. We're 6 years down the line now, so we're sort of a little bit ahead of the curve, I guess, in terms of nitrogen inputs. And for example, we grew 2 fields of spring barley this year with a foliar applied nitrogen only, and that totaled 35 kilos of N. We got 6.5 tons a hectare of 1.6% nitrogen. So, we're on the way, I think, to be able to continue to reduce our nitrogen inputs, but also look at reducing fertilisers, base fertilisers, or fungicides, things like that as well. So we do have some experience, I suppose, in sort of tightening the belt, if you like, on expenditure. Yeah. So that's something we really need to focus on. I think if we cast our eyes into new markets, we've been doing quite a lot of work on sort of carbon and biodiversity trading and marketing. I think that's something that over the next 5 years will start to deliver some alternative income streams for farmers. We've also signed up to a 5- and 10-year stewardship agreement from the beginning of January 2021. So we've enabled or we sort of increased our sort of income from stewardship by about 25%. So we're doing what we can to fill that basic payment gap, but whatever we do, there's going to be a shortfall.
Yeah.
And I think we need to sort of be ready and accepting of that. You know, we've sort of expanded the farm area. I think opportunities may well continue to come in that direction, as the, you know, the whole sort of profitability of agriculture is really put under pressure.
Yeah. I mean, do you look into all of that with a glass half empty or with a glass half full?
I think you have to look at it with a half full glass and be positive about the challenge that's ahead of us. I'm confident of the farming system that we are building and exploring here. I think from a cost of production levels, we are certainly with our AHDB benchmarking hats on, you know, very well placed in terms of our cost structure and our sort of physical performance. You know, it may well be that food prices and farm gate prices continue to increase, and you know, we take advantage of that in the short term. But I think we're going to be in for some really up and down roller coaster rides in terms of farm profitability, and you throw climate change into that as well, and that's the real curveball about, you know, when do we get 4 inches of rain? Is it at a helpful time or a hindering time? And yeah. And you know, we have to be able to take that on the chin and sort of work around it one way or another.
So you
have to look at the positive side of things, if only for your own sort of mental health and your own well-being, and that, I think that's where the strength of a group like Molston Coors Growers Group can really come into its own in terms of sort of knowledge sharing, knowledge transfer, you know, the WhatsApp group we have, lots of helpful hints on there by growers doing different things. We probably don't make enough use of that and the experiences that we have within the whole group to be able to help each other out even further.
Well, that leads me quite very neatly into what was going to be my next question, actually. And, you know, given all the challenges ahead, how would you like to see the Molson Coors relationship with growers develop, or the group develop?
Really great question. I think the strength of the longevity of the group, what have we been going for now since 2008? So it's a testament to the commitment of, you know, Jerry and the Molson Coors team, the growers, and Frontier and the EFFP keeping us all sort of herded in roughly the same direction. So I think more knowledge transfer is important. I think the fact that we can talk to the consumer at the end of the day, the maltster and the brewer, is really invaluable, and to help have those awkward discussions when we have good years and obviously the bad years as well, to try and see our way around those challenges. I think there's going to be more that we can do as a collective of farmers and Molson Coors. I think in terms of something like carbon, with the ability to sequester and capture carbon that the farmers have got, to offset the carbon that the brewing process and the distribution generates on our farms, will add another income stream to the farmers, and also from a sustainability point of view, from the whole Molston Coors Carling angle, what a great story to be able to sell to add to that pint of Carling.
Yeah.
You know, this is a net zero carbon product. Molston are doing everything they can to reduce their carbon footprint from, you know, renewable energies, from water recycling and light bulbs and things like that. But inherently, there will be a degree of carbon that their farmers could offset for them. What a great story that could be.
Yeah. Jake, that's been brilliant. Thank you very much for your time.
Absolute pleasure, Duncan. And I hope everybody's had a good, safe drilling campaign. And we'll catch up at the next AGM.
This brings our second podcast to an end, and we hope you found it useful. As always, we are keen to get any feedback, so please get in touch if you have any comments or ideas for future versions. The steering group are meeting next week to plan the annual growers meeting, which will take place in February next year. So please look out for more details of this, and we can't wait to see you all face to face in 2022.